So vote for me.
How do you fix gastrointestinal issues? Do some whole plant-based foods make gastrointestinal issues worse? What about gluten? How do you make sure you don't get celiac disease?
All right. So a couple of things. How do we fix it? Number one is we test for it first. We test the microbiome. We do the small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, which is the upper part of small intestine. It's a breath test. And we do a stool test, the colon test. The colon test will look at like your digestive enzymes. It'll look at your amount of protein and fats you're absorbing, the amount of fiber that you're eating. And are you absorbing? Are you able to detoxify or not? Is there inflammation in the bowel? Is there leaky gut? Is there overgrowth of upper or lower? Is there bacteria? Is there candida, mycology? Is there parasites? Okay. Looks, so that's kind of the functionality. How's your gut actually working, right? Not just diarrhea, constipation, and, you know, people have a colonoscopy, endoscopy. That just tells us that is there a pathology or disease. We're looking at the function, because even when they do the colonoscopy, just because someone has an issue doesn't mean they see it, right? They don't see digestion, absorption, assimilation. They just see bleeding, tumor, polyp, ulcer, stricture, hemorrhoid, whatever. So we want to look at the function of the gut. So we first look at that. Then we look at the foods. We look at, you know, are, do you have any food sensitivities that are triggering some kind of inflammatory response? Because we shift the patient to a plant-based diet, but we still want to make sure even in the plant world that they don't have any kind of food sensitivities. Now, once we flip that microbiome, everything gets better. Now, the question, the second part of the question is asking, well, isn't certain foods might be aggravating the gut? Yes. So when people have small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, which is very common now, right? Antibiotic use, you know, even this, the data is now showing just even foodborne illness. So 1 in 4 Americans get a foodborne illness every year, right? Go to a restaurant, go to a buffet, you know, go on a cruise, something, get sick, right? Because something wasn't cooked, something didn't wash their hands. Common, right? You don't have to travel outside the country anymore to have this issue. It's like you can go to your local, you know, chain restaurant, you know, and get that problem. So what we have to look at is when the gut microbiome is dysfunctional, then we can get these overgrowths. Now, when they have these overgrowths, right, of bacteria or these other things, then certain foods actually do aggravate it, right? So then there was this whole concept of FODMAPs diets and all these kind of SIBO diets, right? So they were reducing the foods that aggravate and cause gas, right? So these were foods that were fermented beans, you know, legumes, broccoli, all these kind of things. So people would restrict that. The doctors created this diet. Like, here are the things that kind of cause those symptoms. And if you had those symptoms, you don't eat those foods, you'd feel better. So everybody felt better following these diets. The problem is those are not diets that are healing the gut. They're just treating your symptoms again, right? So the idea is that the best foods that are actually going to help prevent that overgrowth again, and that's going to keep your microbiome actually in balance from getting those kind of things, are the foods that actually aggravate in the beginning. So in the beginning, sometimes I'm like, okay, you can avoid some of those foods first while we fix, because if they have leaky gut, if they have an overgrowth, then we have certain protocols that we have to give to fix that. Then once that's fixed, they have to be eating those foods to strengthen their gut, so therefore they don't become the chronic relapsing patient. The problem is most doctors end up having these chronically relapsing patients. There's clinics that treat, you know, gut dysbiosis and SIBO doctors and blah, blah, and they see patients over and over and over and over again. And the reason why they're saying, oh, because they're not telling them how to change their diet to actually reform, rejuvenate, restore that function. So they just make money on this side. Now, it doesn't mean that they're doing something wrong. They're treating the gut correctly, but where they're limiting in their expertise and understanding of the microbiome and nutrition is how do we fix it again, not just manage it or just treat it. And it's kind of like the question before, how do you get rid of candida? It's like, it's not that simple. Microbiome can be thrown off, viral infection or, you know, stress, or I got the flu or I got COVID. Now my gut's off. What can we do? We have to always assess it, you know, determine what we need to do to rebalance it, but we still always have to strengthen it, not just like treat it all the time.
So furthering that point, what are the most important things we can do to rebuild our gut microbiome? What supplements should we take for it?
So it all depends on where you're at in the stage, right? So for example, this is the mistake that most people will do. If they have a bacterial overgrowth, like SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and they take probiotics or prebiotics, they get worse. So people are like, oh, you know, like, and then take more, like, that's not necessarily good. Okay. So a lot of times we have to get control of the overgrowth or the imbalance before we replenish with probiotics. But again, you know, the problem with probiotics, like we have a complete probiotic formula, pills and powders. We've been doing this for a long time. And we're really, you know, I'm kind of people like, oh, you, Dr. Pai, you're so like obsessive compulsive on probiotics, because, you know, we have to ensure the potency, purity, safety, and efficacy. Now, 10% of all probiotics on the market are in the bottle by the time you take it. So if you say something that says 1 billion or 10 billion or 50 billion, it's 10% of that amount that's actually in there at the time that they actually take it. And when we, what we do with ours is that we actually look at stability testing. We look at temperature, humidity, and time. So ours is like a year after the expiration date at room temperature, it will have what it has in the bottle on the bottle. So that's, so there's a little bit of like, because when we give probiotics, we have to make sure that we're doing, I'm delivering it as a, you know, a treatment of restoring your function. It's not just as a willy-nilly, I'll just take it because I said that. Now, I'll give you another thing. Just Amazon recently, they just put a new rule out for sellers. So from April to October, if their product cannot hit 178 degrees Fahrenheit and it's not stable, they're gonna pull it off Amazon coming now because too many things are now being struck. So that means like, but 90% of people buy their probiotics from Amazon, right? Because on a truck, it's, remember, like they're guaranteeing, so it was 10% before this thing. But what happens is showing us that shipping and trucking and warehouses are a lot hotter than we expect it to be. And so a lot of times that even people who are buying even a good product maybe on Amazon is still not getting it because of how it's being handled, right? So this is a problem for, you know, even produce. They could look at it for produce and all sorts of foods, even drugs, people buying, you know, medications, like, well, does my medication do well in the heat? So going back to the gut, so probiotics, then there's prebiotics, then there's sporebiotics. These are specific probiotics that go into the gut. They work for about 2 weeks and they help provide energy and nutrients for the other microbes. Eating fermented foods can be very helpful as well. You can't just replenish everything with fermented foods like drinking kombucha, but those things are not necessarily bad for you. I don't think that they're necessarily needed, but eating fermented foods like kimchi or sauerkraut definitely are important if people like to do that. But replenishing the probiotics are important. And so taking the right kind, there's certain kinds like Saccharomyces boulardii that we give if people have diarrhea or candida issues. I mean, there's now, you know, there's only 50, 60 species available. We even have a probiotic that comes out of Europe that the clinical studies show for depression, mood disorders, and anxiety. I even have a patient has schizophrenia. And after we fixed his gut from leaky gut, we looked at his food allergies and giving him, so I'm not touching any of his schizophrenic medications, which are very strong, by the way. He's now coming in, he's talking, he's having a normal discussion. Now, he's still schizophrenic, mind you, right? But his affect and his ability to communicate is different because it's all the microbiome, it's all the neurotransmitters that are happening in our gut that are not necessarily in our brain. So we're very specific when we give probiotics. It's not just like, oh, just take something. Oh, I take, you know, this. The GI doctor says, take this product at Walgreens, has 1 billion of one species. Good luck. Now you have basically 100 million and good luck that it's now there, even less of that. So there's a lot of things that are kind of meant to fail. They're not harmful, but they don't really get you over the hump. So the system is like, well, I still got to take these 10 other GI medications, or it doesn't really help cure my disease or heal my disease. And so the idea is that when we use probiotics and gut products, even for leaky gut, what kind of ingredients? So when we look at immunoglobulins, for example, which we use now, 5% of people can have problems with immunoglobulins. So we can monitor that. You know, they can get diarrhea, for example. But you know, if someone just types in an IgG powder on Amazon or online, you'll see that it comes with 20 grams of some kind of whey, casein, or dairy protein, which is pro-inflammatory. So we have to look at, you know, getting the immunoglobulins that come from the serum, that come from companies that have done clinical studies, and make sure that it's 100% zero dairy, zero whey, zero, because we're using it not as a nutritional supplement. We're looking at lowering inflammation for people who have colitis or inflammatory bowel disease. That's what the studies are showing it to be used for. So certain things that we are very specific at, but the problem is a lot of people, they just listen to something online and they kind of take this and they kind of jump around, not understanding that some things can aggravate an overgrowth. Some things can actually aggravate their system. There's also levels of like strategy in terms of how to do it. So if I come in, someone has SIBO, they have gut dysbiosis, they have food allergies, they have leaky gut, and they have some kind of metal problem. And I had one person the other day, just last week, and he had like that plus two other things, which is rare, by the way. Okay, it's rare. Not everybody's going to have it. But it's like when someone comes with that much dysfunction, then you have to understand there's a clinical expertise of guidance has to be given of what do you do first? Certain things, if you do too fast, it actually will make it worse. So people are like, I need a heavy metal detox now. No, that's my last thing I'm doing because I can actually have it go out and come back right back in and actually implant or actually cause more of a severe reaction of the removal. So there's a little bit of like understanding, like a lot of people want to do everything at once. A lot of people are health coaches online. Everybody's like, oh, just do this, take this whole product regimen. That's misinformation. So when we look at the gut is really important and you need to have someone has the expertise on understanding microbiome, nutrition, and inflammation. And that's what we can offer. One thing I let the people watching is that we do consultations worldwide. So we do everything by Zoom. We send the testing kits and, you know, anyways, so they don't have to necessarily physically come here. We just provide the education and advice from afar.
Why was it important for you to come back here and speak at the Real Truth About Health conference?
Why? Is because there's more inflammation now than ever. Since, you know, and the interesting thing is, as I fit, you know, last year when I came, I spoke and then I had to immediately leave. I didn't get to spend the whole week. So I only got to spend like the first three days. And then unfortunately, because there was a lot of wonderful speakers that I know really well, who are on the panel, who are plant-based and, you know, who are just, you know, they've done the studies and, you know, they're my heroes and colleagues I really admire and appreciate. But the interesting thing is when I left and I was sitting in the airport, you know, that was the time that COVID was just hitting on the news. And I was actually sitting in LaGuardia, whatever the New York airport is, that I was there close to whatever the conference was. And all these people started coming off the plane with masks, you know, and we're just sitting there watching, you know, CNN or whatever was on the TV. And it was like, you know, breaking news, this thing is coming. And we're like, we didn't know what was happening. We're like, what's going on? There's a huge shift of how we understand inflammation. So my whole, and why I was appreciative of being invited back was not just talking about diet, because by the time everybody listens to everybody, everybody knows that we should be eating a plant-based diet. But what I'm going to focus on is really about what can you do, not only in addition to the diet, you know, getting specifics now, because, you know, people talk about supplements, missing bad, good and bad. Like, I want to get to details, like, these are the specific things that you should be looking for on a bottle, on a product, on a potency. I know that I'm plant-based first. So obviously, you know, supplement the diet, then it'll replace the diet. But it's key to understand because, you know, we still can have problems even if you're plant-based. You can still have a bad day. You can still have stress. You can still have, you know, a low immune system function. You can still not exercise as much. There's other things that can throw your life off aside of eating healthy. And so there's things that we want to add to make sure that we're giving people an optimum benefit to having an optimal outcome of health.
Well, we are very grateful. Excuse me. We're very grateful that you've come back and to join us again and for being so gracious with your time. And with that, is there anything else you want to add before we go?
No, just so you can come, you know, if anybody's interested, you can go to sanjevani.net. That's www.sanjevani, spelled S-A-N-J-E-V-A-N-I. That's S-A-N-J-E-V-A-N-I.net. And also you can go to our Sanjevani store, Sanjevani, S-A-N-J-E-V-A-N-I store, STOR.com, to look at our wonderful products and stuff like that. I do have a book, An Inflammation Nation. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on iTunes. You can get it on Audible and InflammationNation.com. And you can get a signed copy from me. And you can look at bosmeric.com, bosmeric.com, for understanding a little bit more of the anti-inflammatory that I'll be speaking about at the conference.
Wonderful. Dr. Pai, thank you so much. Good to see you again.
Thank you. Nice seeing you again.
Likewise. Be well.
All right. Be well. Stay safe.
Thank you.